If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We are live with a special edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast, the Illness Edition, for Friday. Mm-hmm. Friday the 14th, November 14th, 2014. Wow. Alongside Ian Ferguson with his beer. That'll make you feel better. Mm-hmm. Ian Ferguson.
It will.
I'm Pat Contry. So we were originally supposed to do this on a Wednesday, but, you know, I'm a nice guy. Postpone it. Didn't want to do another solo Patcast and bore the audience.
I don't think anyone else wanted you to do a solo Patcast.
I think I'm fine with the solo Patcast. So we're coming off of the 5th annual NES Marathon. What are we talking on the show today? We're discussing the marathon itself. We're talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens title being revealed. Activision blocking share play on PS4 for their new Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. The Atari landfill carts up on eBay, and they've already been sold. We're talking about the Too Many Cooks short film from Adult Swim that's been sweeping the internet, gone viral. The Assassin's Creed review embargo for Unity. The Fantastic Four film news just coming out, which is going to depress Frank. Smash Brothers pre-sales, way more than Mario Kart so far. A plane going overhead. And your Q&A. So, Ian, besides the illness, how are you doing this week? How are we recovering from the NES Marathon? Are we okay?
As far as exhaustion goes, I was pretty much good by Monday, but I made a realization that the only marathon that I got out of illness-free was last year. The first 2 years we did the marathon, I got pneumonia.
You had pneumonia each time? You have just a gimpy immune system in general.
Yeah,
you know,
I had 3 months of pneumonia the first time, 2 months of pneumonia the second time. But I've spent most of the week sleeping.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I need to do that sometimes.
I was actually fine for most of Monday. I stayed up to like 10:30, 11 at least, and I was like, okay. I know you're going to say something about the hour nap, but no, I was good. Then I hit the wall Monday night. Somehow, like, it went. I worked out Monday, which I always do, and it's like I can do it. It's just that my body's just at like 70% of like strength. And then I hit Monday night, and then bam. Then I slept 14 hours, and I never sleep over like 9 hours ever. And so I slept from like 8:30, passed out after going to Indian buffet, come home, passed out from 8:30 until like 10, 11 the next day. Like that was just, it was like ridiculous amount of sleep that I never get. Or it was like 7:30 to like 10 the next day. Yeah, it was definitely like 13 hours at least. It was ridiculous.
Jeez.
Yeah, but I needed it. And now I'm like, I was fine after that. I'm like still, yeah, I'm learning to deal with it better every year. I think we eat and hydrate better after the first couple of years. We sort of learn how to do that.
Certainly. I mean, we're already rolling into our first topic, which is NES Marathon Recap.
Oh, are we?
I feel like we are.
Way to announce that. You know,
well,
so.
I mean, we're talking about the marathon. We're going to roll right into it. Hydration is so super freaking key for something like that when especially when you're sitting in one place. You know, you don't feel thirsty. It's one of those things where doctors will give you the advice, you know, drink when you don't feel thirsty. You know, you have to maintain this level of fluid anyway. Yeah. We're not running around. We're not out in the hot, hot heat. But, I mean,
we're constantly talking. We're constantly moving. We're constantly thinking. We're constantly playing games. That's all draining your energy one way or the other.
And, you know, keeping your fluid levels adequate is going to help you stay awake. If you're trying to stay awake for 24 hours at a time, you know, if you're not drinking enough, you do get drowsy, you start to tire out, your muscles start to hurt, and that's when you run into, you know, problems with something like that when you're sitting still for so long.
Yeah, or we don't have shifts. I mean, Desert Bus for Hope is this weekend. They do like 3-4 days, but they have shifts of people that come in and help. It's multiple people. For us, it's just us. Not saying we're better, but I mean, it's a different sort of beast in terms of what we're doing.
It's a different vibe. You get a different experience from it.
Yeah, you can see us go a little batty, a little, you know, what would have you. But that's part of this. I think that's why people like it. And no, we switched to Twitch for the first time. And I guess we were happy with that change from testing. It seemed more stable.
It's surprising, too, because we fought that for so long.
Fought that for the last 2 years, because usually Ustream would push us to the front page. When they used to promote actual events, they pushed to the front page. They gave us more resources. They helped push it on, you know, it was like, wow, we this helped get us views. Except the last year, they were sort of going away from that business angle. They don't push. If you go to the front page of Ustream now, you don't see anything anymore. They don't show events. They've changed it to sort of like a business, sort of just business solution Ustream.
Yeah, like a teleconferencing sort of.
Yeah, it's like a teleconferencing sort of solution instead of what it used to be. It used to be just an alternative to Justin TV. It used to be an alternative to Livestream.
Right.
And now you only have is Livestream even around anymore? And you have Twitch, and that's basically what you have left for.
But yeah, the second and third year, they did us great favors to, you know, they put us on the front page. They gave us
even the first year too.
Yeah, and they gave us expanded bandwidth. You know, yeah. they really, you know, because it was a charity marathon and it was something that at the time was still kind of new. They definitely did things differently for us, which was nice. But that's just not available now. And you know, Twitch turned out to be a really great secondary option.
Yeah, and I know more people are on Twitch in general, so it's easier for them to find, I guess, randomly.
Yeah,
and plus there was the whole raid thing, which wouldn't have happened on Ustream. We could talk about that a little bit.
Let's address that real quick. So
it was during, I think it was like commercial break, about probably like 8 hours in. It was like probably, what, 7 o'clock at night, or it's 8 o'clock at night?
Sure.
On Saturday, something like that.
Yeah, and someone else, so basically we come back, and you have to understand we're new to Twitch, and this raid thing is apparently like a Twitch thing. We come back, and in previous years, we have had problems with chat being...
With trolls. People trying to take it over.
People trying to take it over and flooded. So we come back from the marathon, or from our break, and we just see raid, you know, hashtag raid being, you know...
Hundreds.
Just being flooded in the chat room. And Pat and I don't think this is unreasonable, we panic. And, I mean, we immediately...
It wasn't so much a panic. It was like, what the hell is this?
So we immediately start banning some people, and... We come to find out that this is a Twitch thing, and it's basically when one live stream ends, people pick another live stream to go raid, and basically they get all those viewers. So it's meant to be a friendly thing. It's meant to help out a stream, but you have to understand that when someone is new to a service like that and they don't understand what this is, that looks extremely hostile. I mean, I hate to say that. And don't tell me that I need to read up on Twitch rules, practices, and things like that.
I think it's hostile either way. I don't care if it's supposed to be friendly. The fact of the matter is they're taking over your chat and disrupting it. And it wasn't like every person posting it one time. I don't think it was like, it went on for a couple minutes at least. It was not stopping.
It might have been. I just feel like something like that is like, it's cool like that you want to pass your viewers on to someone else, but you don't have to announce your arrival in the chat room.
No, to me that comes more of a look how cool I am versus we're just going to watch this.
Yeah, just show up.
Do I sound ungrateful? I don't give a shit if I sound ungrateful. It's our event.
I don't want to sound ungrateful because eyes mean more money raised, but at the same point in time, I feel like the people who got pissed really just weren't seeing things from the other end of the spectrum. And yeah, it came across as strange and weird, and like I said, my initial reaction to it after previous marathons with something similar happening was that, okay, we're dealing with our yearly hostile attack on the chat room. We have to fix this.
Yeah, and so it's not like we even said anything really rude. I'm just like, well, it's people just being assholes again, because like every year we deal with assholes.
Yeah,
every year.
Yeah, we're not we're not specifically trying to single you out for trying to, you know, bring us viewership, but yeah, this is something that we're used to, and we just figured we were dealing with the status quo that we've dealt with every year, which is a couple moments where we need to take control of the chat room and fix a problem.
Yeah. But I mean, for overall, though, the chat went well. We averaged about, that raid got us whatever, an extra 800,000 people at that point.
For a while. 800, yeah. I mean, but we were pushing 3,000 viewers for a while.
But we were averaging 1,800 to 2,000 viewers for most of the event, mm-hmm. which was a lot more than the year before.
More than double. Well, more than double of last year, and double of what I think even our highest ever was.
Highest ever, I think. We used to top out around 1,800 when we show like the AVGN video in the past or something like that, but we were definitely going above and beyond. So thanks to those people that stayed with us the whole time. Obviously, people know the marathon more from last year. That much more than double. I don't know about that. I know my YouTube channel has more than doubled the past year, so maybe that's something to do with it a little bit. But we got all the NES marathon moments out that week. I think the our quote unquote celebrity guests also helped push it a lot that week. And guys like Andre Meadows and James Rolfe and Brent's always good for pushing it. Pro Jared. So we thank them for getting the word out. So, yeah, we raised more than we ever did before. We raised $20,000, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's insane. And, I mean, not to sell ourselves short, but the podcast has grown. And I think just the podcast alone has, you know, brought attention to the marathon because we talked about it on multiple episodes. So I think even just doing this helped the marathon as well.
Yeah, so lots of cool moments we had again, of course. So I don't know when we're gonna when I'm gonna put up the marathon for viewing. The cool thing about Ustream was it was cool to having a feature that you can put them up in pieces and people could watch it.
Yeah, they could pay for like the whole thing and
50 cents apart, whatever it was, you know, or a dollar apart. Because I don't want the whole thing on Ustream for lots of reasons. I don't want to have my whatever we say stuff off the cuff or whatever else. It's not something that I want 27 hours of me eating up on YouTube willy-nilly people to pick apart or download or re-upload or manipulate. It's just not
on YouTube.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said Ustream.
Yeah, that's what I mean. On YouTube, I don't want them to just, you know what I mean? I want some control over this is something we did. So that's why I have it released usually on my website. So if you really want it, you go to the website, you can watch it. I rotate in the past hour blocks rotated free, and if you want to pay for the whole thing, you pay for the whole thing and watch it at your leisure.
Because, boy, do I say some stuff.
You say some stuff.
I do say some stuff.
We did talk about, you know, what it's like with forest porn when you're 13, 14 years old.
That was a really good segment.
And I marked all the good marathon moments as they happened this year. There was about 10 or 12 of them.
I had a lot of fun. When you walked in with the belt, that was the funny thing. You know, you feel with it, right, until something happens. And you walked in with the belt, and I was like, wow, what a surprise this is. Despite the fact that you had talked to me all week about how you couldn't find belts at the toy store and you ordered a belt online.
You still forgot
about
it.
And it was supposed to come in. And then I tripped over that fucking package that morning when running to go get something. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's the belt. And then come the next morning, I'm like, where did Pat get this belt from? What the fuck is this shit?
What was funny about that was I totally forgot I ordered it. And the reason I had ordered it was because I remember I was trying to keep it a surprise, but I didn't remember that I told you about I wanted to get the belt.
Well, don't worry, my brain kept it a surprise.
Obviously, mine did too for myself. But Target did not have the world heavyweight, the heavyweight Ric Flair, you know, old WCW belt, which I guess they stopped making. Because online, it was like $50 off of Target. You can't get it anymore. That's the belt I really wanted.
Right.
But the second belt, I wanted to get the IC belt, which looks good.
Yeah.
The tag team belt looks like crap. The WWE belt looks like crap, which they got rid of because now it's the world heavyweight title. And the U.S. title looks like crap. Yeah. So that was the only acceptable one. So I had to order it off Amazon. And so it came Saturday afternoon. And at first, I didn't know what the hell it was when it came. I was like, what the hell? Now this is what it is. So I was trying to get it going while you were away. I was like trying to put the little Velcro thing on. And it fit around my waist barely. That's a kid's belt, but it fits.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't have been a surprise to me, but it was a surprise to me. And then later on, I was like, all right. No, Pat definitely told me about that a week ago.
So basically then what that means is next year I'm going to have an ice hockey medal. I'm going to have a rock and ball belt. So you have your one belt. I'll have my other eight. Well, Dusty Diamond belt. I'm going to come in with all the straps.
The IC belt's going to be the only one that matters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You say that, but you wanted to win Tecmo World Wrestling.
No, that one really means nothing to me. Pro wrestling is the only one that means
anything. Ice hockey, Tecmo Bowl every year means something to you at the start.
It meant something to me this year. That's something I'm always going to be an underdog at. But Tecmo Bowl means something to me, and Rock and Ball means something to me. Tecmo World Wrestling doesn't. I like the game, but it's not pro wrestling. That's where the rivalry is.
That's where
the rivalry is.
But the thing about the about Dusty Diamond. Yeah, but it's not really a wrestling belt. But whatever, I'll think of something for that. But no, the thing about Tecmo Super Bowl was that. It was much more even because Eli Manning, they made terrible in the game. I couldn't complete a pass in the game.
Yeah.
I couldn't complete. The year before, I did like five long passes to Victor Cruz. This year, I don't think Victor Cruz had any passes this year.
Well,
it was so bad. I was like, wow, I know Eli got a lot of interceptions last year, but most of them weren't his fault. And they just nerfed him like anything. I was like, oh, Jesus.
And I feel like the Bills were better, like stats wise, they had upped him a little bit this year. You know, we always pick the same teams because of obvious reasons, but you know, when I used to be quite good at Tecmo Super Bowl. We used to play just the standard cart, and we'd have friends over, and there were house rules. But I just used to play as the Bills, and the Bills in the standard cart are a really good team. So it's, you know, I always think about that sort of thing, and that's probably why I was fairly decent at the game, was because I was actually using a genuinely good team.
Sure. So we had fun doing it. I think this year went fairly smooth.
It did.
Except for we had to upgrade the software. Every year it's something. Last year actually was the smoothest one, I think, technology-wise last year.
Yeah, this year we had to pay to upgrade our Wirecast because and I'm sure someone in the comments now will say, oh, you could have done this, but we were stressed and we just decided to drop the money on it. We couldn't get – we couldn't get it to generate the code that we needed to stream to Twitch because it had finally gone over completely from Justin TV
to
Twitch, and we couldn't figure out how to get a code generated on our old version.
So we actually, you know, legally own Wirecast now, which is it's nice to legally own software. So it's nice to do that. And because we use it for the podcast, we use it for that. And it worked out. It worked out well. The interface is fantastic.
Yeah, the new interface. I mean, I didn't touch it this year because I need to get accustomed to some of the changes. But it looked a lot simpler.
Yeah, it's a lot simpler. And we actually recorded the stream to the hard drive, so when the clips go up, they'll look a lot better than us in the past, relying on what Ustream received and then us downloading, which usually was actually pretty good. But now it'll look better. It'll be full 30 frames, full HD. That will be, you know, for all posterity.
So for any, I do want to point out for any people who are listening, who are watching and participating in the podcast, real quick while it's on my mind, I have been sick all week. I will start to email out codes tomorrow and Sunday.
Get addresses.
And we'll get addresses to mail out prizes Monday or Tuesday. We've always been good for them. No one needs to worry. But yeah, I have felt like balls. So that would explain the delay. And I know it's just a code and an email, but I'm not gonna trickle this out. I'm going to sit down and do it all at once.
You also look like a pasty ball.
Yeah, I know. Right now. I feel like a pasty ball right now.
There's been times where I think it was like 3 weeks ago I felt terrible. You looked like how I felt that one time. This came out, and no, this was not a new Wii game. Star Wars The Force Awakens title was revealed to be the Episode 7 title. Comes out December 2015. Of course, this is a Disney venture now since they bought Star Wars already. They bought it 2 years ago, almost they got the rights to basically all the, you know, Lucasfilm stuff. So I think most people think this is a pretty good title. I mean, there's not many details known yet on this, but I have some guesses that might come to pass about what sort of this title sort of means. But what do you think about the title overall? And that's always a big thing. I think it's a pretty good title.
Yeah, I do too. A lot of the people I've talked to, I can't believe we're discussing a title.
But it's always a big sort of thing.
A lot of people that I've talked to have, it is, especially with Star Wars. A lot of people I've talked to haven't liked it, which is weird. Online, the reaction seems mixed. I don't understand how you can get really worked up over a title. I like it because I think it really hints at where the movie is kind of going to start off. I think it's going to take place, you know, timeline-wise, obviously after Return of the Jedi, and I think it's going to be in a time where the Force is kind of regarded as a myth, or kind of
it's had its heyday. It's done.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe you have Luke, you have Leia using a little bit, and maybe their kids. But there's no more probably Jedi Council around. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
yes.
They're still trying to rebuild the Republic. You know, there's no school, there's no Jedi Temple. So
that would be.
There's probably no Sith, or so we probably think there's no Sith. Probably beginning of the movie, it's like it's kind of just, you know, what's the Force right now?
Right. So I think the title hints to kind of like a clean slate for the movies and the films.
Which is great.
Which is, yes, that's actually very heartening for me, because the more and more I think about the prequels and I try to justify any enjoyment I had from them, which was mostly drug-related, I mean, I hate them. I mean, I always have, but like even when I go back to them, I dislike them even more every time I think about them. So I really kind of want something to erase that taste from my mouth.
I mean, I'm not going to, obviously taste in film is subjective, but overall critically, the prequels are failures, especially, Episode 1 and 2. Revenge of the Sith has its moments. Even that narratively is a mess.
This is how I described, cause we were actually talking about this at work earlier, because even though I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, I know, but when you work in a video game store, things like Star Wars just come up out of the blue and you have to talk about it. And the skeleton of the movie, the basic framework of the film, I had no problem with.
Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah. Like, I enjoyed kind of how it was tying things together. I enjoyed what the story wanted to be and the general idea behind it. But the acting was just so bad, and the directing was just so bad, that it took what could have been a really enjoyable chapter of that movie and made it, I mean, honestly, nearly unwatchable.
Well I've always... this will become the whole what Pat would have done with the prequels. No one asked to see a 9-year-old Anakin. No one ever envisioned that they wanted to see that.
My buddy said that earlier.
No one did. Yeah. So you make Episode 2, Episode 1. Hell, you can keep the plot the same for the most part. Start him as a teenager, a whiny teenager, or what have you. Start there, and then basically the stuff that happens in Episode 3 could be split over two movies to let it breathe, let the Clone Wars breathe, and the aftermath of that, and then have the whole turn be the entire third movie instead of the second half of the third movie where,
you know,
all of a sudden the Emperor's skin is now foldy and, you know, I'm going to slice off Mace's hand and so now I'm evil. Like, that was the turn to Darth Vader.
The turn was, let's kill all these kids. And it's like,
no, the turn was before that, though. He anointed him Darth Vader before that just so he has a chance of saving Padme, which, again, after all the hoopla about why does this guy turn evil? Oh, because he's heartbroken. That's why he turns into the most evil villain in cinema history, because he's heartbroken. You know, that's basically it. That can be any movie. So it's like everything was a letdown. Supposedly, the word is that when George Lucas first showed the first draft of that film, Revenge of the Sith, to the staff and everything, they even said they didn't understand why Anakin turned. That's not good when you're showing that to like the people in creative, like why, like they didn't get it.
The people who are supposed to be the most behind you don't understand what the hell you're doing.
Yeah, so
that's bad.
So here's the thing. Here's why. Obviously, you have a much better director. Lucas is so far away from these films. You have Abrams doing them, and if it's the style of the two new Star Trek films, that's fine because they're more like Star Wars films than Star Trek anyway. You know, in terms of the tone. But I like the fact that, especially that. The numeral 7 is not front and center. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's almost like this is a whole new start of a sort of new series of films.
No numeral, Force Awakens. I have a feeling that by the second one they do, all vestiges of the past movies will be gone.
Sure.
I mean, the lore will exist, but the characters, such as Luke and Leia and
I'm sure Luke will still be in there. I think.
I feel like and it's not that I don't like those characters, and it's not that I don't think they can do something with those characters.
They're not going to kill off all the original characters.
No, they're not going to kill them off. No, what I'm saying is, though, the sooner they try to make it their own thing and stop trying to bring in parts from past movies, the better off that whole series is going to be.
I was actually surprised when they announced that Han Solo would come back.
Right, me too.
I thought that, well, his story's sort of over. Why not just at least have him a cameo, but don't make him a main character? Have him sort of do his own thing. I always knew that, you know, Luke would be like the Jedi Master like Obi-Wan was. That made sense.
Yeah, but just like Obi-Wan wasn't actually a major character in New Hope, that doesn't mean that Luke has to be a... I mean,
he was
a major
character in
New Hope. Okay, New Hope he was. Not so much afterwards. I guess that's what I'm getting at. That's what I'm getting at. So they don't have to kill him off.
This will be the bridge movie.
Yeah.
This will be the bridge movie, and we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be cool. I have mixed feelings about them not basically saying the expanded universe canon and now it doesn't exist anymore. Mixed feelings because there was some cool stuff that they had with that. I know they had the Heir of the Empire and the Thrawn trilogy, and not that you expected that to be these movies, but if they were, I think people would have been juiced for that because those were really highly regarded in the 90s as good books.
I feel like we've discussed this before, maybe not on here, but personally. My whole thing with that is I understand, but we are getting to the point where the people who really care about that stuff are not the target audience for these movies anymore.
Sure.
And to bring that stuff in risks confusing more people than it does...
Well, I don't know about confusing, because they're not going to know that was based on books from 20 years ago. What, they came out in 93, those books about?
Well, sure, but that's the other point. I mean, these are books that are 20 years old. They don't really need that stuff. But by not addressing it, you don't exactly have to wipe it from canon. You just don't have to address it.
Well, they chose not to do that. I'm more, not upset, but I always loved the character of Kyle Katarn from the Dark Forces video games, and that was always sort of kind of canon, and now I guess it's not anymore.
No, that was supposed to be totally canon.
He was the guy that personally got the Death Star plans. You know, he existed in that universe. He was in, you know, well, he wasn't in Shadows of the Empire, but he was always around Kyle Katarn. And I guess Shadows of the Empire doesn't matter anymore either, but that was always kind of a weird sort of thing. Anyway, Shadows of the Empire. But now you got video games that aren't canon anymore, which is kind of weird. Because before, Lucas was always like, okay, that kind of...
As a comic book reader, canon is fucking overrated, dude. It doesn't matter.
But it's a video game. It should matter as a video game.
As long as the movie is good, I don't give a shit what it's doing to canon.
Yeah.
So, speaking of video games, moving on. Because I'm so good with these segues, especially right now.
You were awesome at the segues. People don't see the seams at all.
Activision. Was Activision-y. And Activision's blocked SharePlay on PS4 for Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. And actually, there's...
What is SharePlay? We talked about this like nine months ago.
And there's been reports that it's also been blocked for Ghosts retroactively. So what SharePlay is it's the ability where a person who owns a game can share a game to someone else on their friends list in 60-minute chunks, basically, they can play without owning a copy. And Sony, it's really... I think it's like 2 weeks old. And Sony announced, when they announced it and they were talking about it and really getting into the nitty-gritty, they said, you know, there was questions. What about third-party developers? And they said all PS4 games will you know, be SharePlay enabled. And apparently that's not the case with Activision. So Activision doesn't want you to be able to digitally lend out your games to friends. Activision themselves has said that the reason for doing so is because that the feature is new, and they want to ensure a quality play experience for everyone involved, which is the fucking response that every company gives for everything ever when they fuck you in the ass.
Yeah, they said our engineers did not have access to it before it launched.
Yeah,
why wouldn't they? So we haven't had a chance to evaluate it to see how it will impact the experience across all modes of play. So, of course we wouldn't include a feature in our game without having the chance to test it.
Of course we wouldn't do anything that allows people to play our game without spending money. So here's the deal. Sony put in a sensor option that basically allowed, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it was to prevent spoilers from being leaked by doing this.
Yeah, so publishers could choose, okay, you can play, but I don't want them to see this cutscene, so we'll put something over the screen that says you can't see it.
What Activision chose to do was censor everything.
Yeah, which is really funny. Censor the entire game. You can try to play it, it's not going to work out. But
it's kind of hilarious.
Here's the thing, though. I mean... Doesn't Activision have the right to do this?
Well, yes, but this is my problem with it on both ends. Activision comes across looking like greedy douchebags like they always do.
Well, yeah.
And Sony comes across as looking really fucking stupid because who the fuck... I mean, why do you tell people that everyone's going to sign on for this? No, not everyone's going to sign on for this.
Sure.
Especially because, okay, so it's 60 minutes at a time, but you have unlimited shares, and you can immediately share it right back to the same person.
Oh, you can? So they can play it forever.
They can play it forever.
For like a 6-hour chunk of time.
But with the stipulation that I believe you have to be on the console, and you have to basically every 60 minutes go reshare, basically.
So, but basically, though, you can have entire gameplay session with your friend. They never can pay for it.
So, I mean, Activision does have that right, but I think... I just hate that corporate speak. Just come out and say it. Just come out and say you want to make the fucking money.
Well, no one's ever going to say that, though.
Yeah,
come
but I really fucking... It drives me nuts.
No one's ever going to say that.
I know. So Sony should never have promised something that was so painfully obviously not going to be true. And Activision should just come out and say, buy our game. If you want to play our game, buy our game.
Well, we know that their sales have been down versus previous Call of Duty years.
No, not this one. This one's sold like fucking hotcakes.
Oh, the pre-sales were down, though.
Yeah, well, pre-sales are down on everything, and we'll touch on a little bit of that later. But, I don't know. I mean, it's a bumble on both parts. I don't really think... I mean, I hate to say it. I don't honestly think Activision is really the main party at blame here. I think it's Sony.
I think it's just so weird that like you can do this to begin with, and people didn't think there was going to be something like this that was going to happen some point.
I have to be honest with you, and maybe I'll get flamed in the threads, or maybe someone will explain it, but I've read things on SharePlay. I have a fucking PS4, and I don't really understand how it works. I really don't. I mean, I think that's the biggest barrier that Activision doesn't need to worry about.
It's funny because they're instituting something that Xbox wanted to institute, Xbox One, about sharing the entire game, and Sony's kind of done that a little bit. You know, so that's kind of weird.
With an annoyance restriction of every hour you have to be like, yes, they can play more.
See, I didn't know that. I thought it was just 1 hour and that's it to try out the game. This is now, we can just each buy a game each and then just...
The thing is, I would never use it because a game like that, any game that I'm going to get really into, you know, any game that I'm likely to play for less than hour burst.
Can you get your Doritos out? Can you get out your Mountain Dew, bro?
Is a downloadable title that I'm going to pay the $15 for. Sure. And anything that I'm going to want to plunk down and put my time into is not something that I'm going to have to, I don't want to have to coordinate that with you. I'm just going to go out and buy the game. So to me, I don't think the feature sounds that attractive other than maybe trying out a game. And I'm the guy who doesn't even play demos. At this point, I know what I'm going to enjoy and what I'm not, and my disappointing surprises are few and far between. You know, I honestly, the whole thing is not a big deal to me. I just think it's kind of silly. Silly-like? People paying too much for Atari landfill cards.
Okay, yeah, this is...
So
I expected people to pay money for this, but Jesus Christ.
I'm going to say something right now, okay? They said that there are still 800 to about 1,200 more to go up on eBay.
Okay.
So why pay $250 now when you can probably get the ass end for like $50.
Let's back up here. So Alamogordo, they did the landfill for the Atari carts. They found they dug up a small portion of them. Now keep in mind, we'll come back to that. A small portion of them.
Yes.
Documentary for Xbox. I saw it at Comic-Con with James. I did a review of it. Blah 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 blah. Howard Scott Warshaw, cool guy. So they want to make money. The town.
Yeah, that's cool.
They own it as their property. So they put these up on eBay about a week ago. They just ended, most of them ended today or yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
These are all complete in box, crush box, and loose carts. Looks like Centipede. Looks like you have, obviously, E.T. carts. Some are still in plastic. I think Missile Command. So they put up Phoenix carts. And what's cool about them is that they are individually numbered. There is a certificate of authenticity. I have not examined it
closely. They put up Phoenix carts?
Yeah, I just saw one here. There's a Sword Quest one.
Oh, I'd actually get a Phoenix card.
You would on a landfill? You're part of the problem. So here's the thing, though.
Not for not for that money.
They went, the loose ones went for like maybe $100 to, if you want to, you know, Defender, $220 for a boxed one. The ET ones, at least a grand, up to like $1,400 and $1,500 for a destroyed ET cartridge from the landfill.
You're paying for garbage.
It's literally garbage, but here's the problem. Here's the big problem. Now, I know people, these are a lot of people that are probably like quasi-celebrities or people that are celebrities that found out about this. I don't want to drop the money on this. Me, personally, I have very little interest in this.
Neither do I. I mean, I just...
I would maybe spend like $40 on one. That's like sort of like my sort of where I'm at to what I think these are valued at.
I like Phoenix as a game. If I could get one for $25...
You'd want one just because...
Just because. But I'm not paying over.
You're not paying hundreds of dollars. Actually, the loose ET ones went for like $700, just the loose ones.
That's fucking dumb.
Here's the weird thing about this. First of all, you said there's more of these that they can sell.
No, they have... already stated there's like 800 to another 1200 that they're going to put up.
So the price is going to drop precipitously.
Yeah.
Unless you had to be the first person to get it. So let's just say the first batch ET loose for 700. Second batch maybe they go for 400. Third batch maybe they go for 200. There's going to be diminishing sort of returns for there's only a certain amount of people with any collectible that are willing to spend top dollar for something until you run out of those people.
Yeah.
That you run out of people that are willing to spend $1,000 on an ET landfill cart. At that point, then the value comes down, which means either you should have waited or now I've gotten so hyped about it to begin with. What's to keep Alamogordo to go back and say, wow, this is a cash cow. What if we go dig up 20,000 more of these and do the same exact thing next year?
Sure.
Then all of a sudden, you think you're... ET cart that you spent $1,500 on. Yeah, it's limited now. Now there's 500 of them instead of only a couple of dozen. Now what? Not saying that it's bad to go out and buy these things, but I wonder if people are thinking about this aspect of it.
No.
That these are not limited. There's a ton of these. They only dig up a very small amount of these to begin with. I don't know the cost of them to go back and get the permits and redig them up, but now the town knows it. I don't think the town expected them to sell a cart for $1,500 for one cart.
I didn't expect. I figured this was stuff that was going to go for $120 to $200.
A few hundred dollars for an ET cart, complete box smashed up? Yeah. That seems reasonable.
$1,500.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Shit. That's all I can say.
Fuck.
You know, so I wish I had them. So here's the other bad thing about this. I didn't look up a lot of the bids. I didn't see if these were scalpers. God forbid if you're a reseller of these. That's just really bad. But I'm really, really in my heart of hearts hoping that these are embossed certificates. That these are not easily counterfeited,
right? Forgeable.
Because then what's to keep some from smashing up some ET cards that are worth $5 each or $2? Throw them in the dirt for a couple days and then print up their own sheets. You know what I mean? Like and this is weird stuff now.
And the thing is, there's.
These are garbage carts that are worth thousands of dollars.
There's too many of them for people, I think, to all collectively get together like you do with a true collectible, like a World Championships cart, and make a database of numbers.
No, so, you contact the town.
Yeah, so no one is going to necessarily know if a counterfeit comes up. Hopefully it's not an issue. Hopefully it is a harder counterfeit skip.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get to see close up. I'm sure you can probably now.
There is a certificate of authenticity. Where it looks like they're signed, but they could... I mean, all it takes is one person to buy one of these certificates and then scan it and then redo their own. There is a seal on it, but anything can be counterfeited. They'd counterfeit $30,000 Neo Geo cards, for God's sake. They can do a piece of paper. And the other certificate, looks like there is a metal embossing on it. These can be counterfeited, though. You can counterfeit these. You know, this is not going to be a problem. I'm saying if you're industrious enough to do it, you will do this. But that's not even the issue. The issue is there are tons of more of these underground still.
But I have a feeling that by the end of this run, by the time they finish with what they have, it's not going to be worth it to counterfeit them.
It's going to drop more and more. They're going to drop to like $100, $200 carts.
Yeah. I mean, counterfeiters are stupid. They are. But I think that if it drops below a certain amount, or if Alamogordo makes any noise about possibly digging up more, counterfeiters are going to realize it's not worth their time.
Sure. But I'm also just still worried about one person doing it. You know, it's just, you know, there's shitty people out there.
Yeah, I mean, even just one in the marketplace.
Buy it, beware, though. It's your responsibility.
Yeah, fuck off. Whoa. Jinx.
So we always agree about that.
Yeah, we do agree about that. That's one of the few things.
Sometimes we talk about a viral video that we don't usually talk about these. But this one, the reason I want to talk about Too Many Cooks, for a couple reasons.
All right.
One, it's not like some sort of guy getting beaten up or girls fighting viral video on World Star. You know, it's not anything like that. It's not a dumb Gangnam style music video. This is an extremely well done produced Adult Swim short film that's 11 minutes long. Usually viral videos are like 30 seconds.
It's like 5 minutes too long.
It's 11 minutes, but I know. Here's what's interesting about this.
If it's too long.
I don't think it's too long. I just think that what is it? What is Too Many Cooks? Too Many Cooks is a parody of 80s and 90s sitcom openings. They use the Full House font. It has like the Family Matters and Perfect Strangers sort of opening. The song sounds like a song that could have been there for a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it could have been, if you plug that into TGIF on ABC, it sounds like it could have fit. So you have like all the quintessential characters. You have the hapless dad, and you have the little baby, and you have the sassy grandmother show up, and they stop and smile at the camera, which is what they always did in those 80s shows like Full House and Family Matters. Like whatever they're doing, they'd stop, turn to the camera and smile like awkwardly. So the thing is that when you first watch this, and my experience first watching this is that the first 2 minutes, like, okay, this is a somewhat clever joke. First 2 minutes, the first minute is like an entire opening, because back then, opening sitcoms were about a minute for the full version. Then it happens again within the same house, but now you have like the tomboy girl, and now you have like the dorky scientist kid, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, we remember seeing that in shows too. You have looks like Joey Lawrence as the neighbor, clever. They do the third minute, and then it goes into like now they're in the workplace, and now they have a sort of a Roseanne turn around the table sort of thing, but now. The first inkling that this is something could be something different is that the family goes from the Caucasian to the black family. Like, okay, now they're doing something weird, and then it goes to a female cop next to a shirtless fireman, and now it goes to a whole T.J. Hooker Hill Street Blues cop drama opening. Like, okay, now this is going someplace weirder. So the joke right when the joke starts to get old, it starts to change, and then that's what I think why this has caught on is because. It's not just one joke that keeps going. It goes into this weird, absurdist sort of place, and it keeps getting stranger and stranger. And I'm not one usually for absurdist Adult Swim humor, because honestly, I think a lot of it is lazy. It's just, randomness is funny, so we're going to put lots of random shit on the screen, which can be funny, but it can't sustain itself. This sustains itself because it tries to do something different and actually has somewhat of a narrative that goes on throughout the 11 minutes.
So, I mean, I watched it and I got sort of the same thing from you that you did. At this point, I assume most of our listeners, viewers have watched it. And if you haven't, well, it's an 11 minute short. I'm not ruining much. It turns into sort of like a slasher thing and you start trying to figure out what's going on. My problem with it is it's kind of the exact opposite of what Pat said. I got into a lot of the Adult Swim absurdist stuff when it was first coming out. Aqua Teen, C-Lab 2020, Space Ghost. Mm-hmm. No surprises to me when at the end it showed William Street was behind it, because it's a William Street production through and through. But nothing about it struck me as particularly humorous. I mean, I chuckled at certain things, like the obvious reference to Clarissa Explains It All. But even though, yes, you're right, it kept morphing into something new.
Sure.
You know, the joke kept morphing into something new. It kept spoofing something else. And I was paying attention to like numbers and how many times people turned and what was happening and how many times things happened. I'm sure that if you look online right now, there's tons of hidden messages in it, like there is in a Boards of Canada song. I'm sure these people probably made this and they built a lot of stuff in there for people to think about, but there is no point to it.
And well, that's
to
the
me,
thing.
To me, it just got frustrating because the name Too Many Cooks, I think when I watch this, they wanted you to look for something different. But really, I think it doesn't go any deeper than the name is Too Many Cooks. A bunch of guys at William Street got together. They had a bunch of these stupid ideas.
Yeah.
They put them together in one thing. And that's the end result. And I don't think it actually goes any deeper than that.
Well, here's the thing, which is funny, because the creators went on Reddit and people had these really cool sort of theories about what it all
sure,
means.
Right.
And they were responding. But they were like, wow, that's a cool idea. You can interpret it how you want, though. Which, when people write things, sometimes that happens. Or creators, usually people start interpreting things that the creator didn't intend. But that doesn't make the theories any less valid.
No,
you can't apply them to that.
It doesn't.
Which is what makes this great, because you're doing this for a short film on YouTube, that on a video that went viral. People have all these weird theories about what does this mean? Does this say something about too many cooks being too many people in the creative process? Are these bad sitcoms? Is this the killer trying to save the creative medium of TV by killing all these bad characters? When Smurf pushes the button, what happens? Does he push the button or not? Is this now like Inception at the end? Like, this is, even though they didn't plan on this being like this, the fact that it's become something like this makes this something cooler than what I think was, well, it's just a dumb thing. Which, yeah, it's just a dumb thing, but there are some really weird things in there that can make it look layered.
I bring it back to a music group that I think at this point people know about, but Boards of Canada is notorious for doing that with their music, hiding all sorts of stuff so that you interpret it in a billion different ways that they probably had no intention. And the music is good, but just like this, the actual film is pretty decent. I just, all they did was bury so many hooks into it that it was impossible for people not to read into it.
Sure.
And I didn't find that particularly special or impressive.
In fact, the only the things that I love about, obviously Smurf is a play on like an Alf character.
Yes.
You know, he's like a weird puppet character, and the name comes from Snarf from Thundercats. By the way, Smurf is such a great looking character that I cannot picture him not being used elsewhere.
I believe he has been, actually.
Or will be in the future. Yeah. And the fact that he's sort of like the savior of the day, or was he, of the whole sort of video. But no, I just think it was very enjoyable, and it's just a mind fucked. But here's the thing, though, is that was meant to be seen at like 4 a.m. in the morning, randomly.
Mm.
So just imagine, obviously, we with the hindsight, imagine if you were watching TV at 4 a.m. and you actually sat through that thing. What the hell was your thought? Obviously, there's weird stuff on Adult Swim, but this is just like bizarre in terms of where it goes and comes back to.
I will give you that. If I had seen it in its intended place.
Yeah.
In my
on the TV,
in my intended state,
half which, asleep or
just screwed up, you know. Yeah. I mean, then I definitely would have a different opinion of it. I'd be like, pretty clever of them to drop something that mind fucky at 4 in the morning when they know that either I'm suffering from insomnia or I'm on drugs. But I don't know, I guess just after days and days of people talking about it and then, you know, watching it at work while sick, I just,
and
the
plus,
conversation we're having about it is more enjoyable than actually watching it.
Well, plus, you watched it way late. I watched it in the first day when I think it only had like 10,000 views. And I was
no
like,
one spoiled anything for me.
I know what you're saying, though, but you went into it where, wow, this has been viral for like, and it's still viral now, over a week later, which is
sure.
ridiculous for anything going by. It's still trending on Twitter like almost every day,
right.
Which is insane. But I watched it. I forgot how I found it the first day, but I watched it. There was like, I was like, what is this? There's like less than 10,000 views. This must be, what is this? And then I watched, I'm like, oh, well, this is really freaky and creeped out. But I liked it. I love the my favorite part is actually probably the whole space, like Battlestar Galactica part.
Yeah,
it's hysterical.
I enjoyed
that. And the theme song sounds like Charlie Angels if you listen mm-hmm. closely. No, but I think it's cool. I'm not a big fan of the huge gory over the top stuff. I think that's like a crutch for comedy when you just go ultra gold. I don't like when South Park does it a lot sometimes where it's like, oh wow, how many times do you see someone getting disemboweled and it's funny? It's like, I don't like a lot of repeat humor. And the guy even said, like, when the Falcon at the start of the Dynasty/Dallas thing, the Falcon, it comes back to the turn, it does like 7 times. He said that was actually an error in the editing room at first and they liked it and kept it. I hate humor that repeats like that.
I don't.
And that to me, actually, shit like that throws off the whole tone, because up to a certain point, these could conceivably be Like, if you looked at the first minute or so, that could have been a sitcom opening, almost verbatim.
It's stuff like that that actually turned me on it, and it's part of what they used to do a lot in Adult Swim humor, but it's also part of the need to fill 11 minutes and 11 seconds. Sure. And when you run out of ideas, what do? They did it in Aqua Teen. They did it in C-Lab. They do it in all sorts of things. They just fucking repeat because they need an extra 30 seconds.
Well, I'm saying that's what kills a little bit because the humor...
That was a big thing that killed
it. The humor up to that point was so on... So just on point for... okay, this is a cool opening. This could have been an opening. It's done so well. There's no wink or nod to the camera. It's just... That's an opening. Even the like Hill Street Blues cop drama, a little bit over the top, throwing the nightstick and then having the criminal smile. But that's when it starts to morph anyway. But then when you get to the Dallas part, now it's totally morphed, and now we know something's up. Right. Now this isn't just repeating the same 1 minute joke four times. Now it's going a different direction. Obviously the G.I. Joe opening, which was awesome. The G.I. Joe part, it took the exact same, those were like lifted directly from the cartoon opening in terms mm-hmm. of the punch and the uppercut and everything else. But no, I just check it out. I everyone's saying Smarf is great. Smarf is fantastic. I hope they had that puppet somewhere.
I mean, I would say check it out, I guess, you can be part of the dialogue, but yeah. I mean, like I said, you'll enjoy the dialogue more than you... I enjoyed the dialogue more than I enjoyed the video.
The fact that we're talking about it, we never talk about viral videos, the fact that we're only
talking about it because you made me.
I'm not talking about Gangnam Style.
Alright, so, back to video games.
I hate your segues, you have to do a segue training.
I don't care. The new Assassin's Creed came out.
Unity.
This week.
Which we talked about before, the lack of the female character. Skins or whatever. Yeah.
Well, apparently maybe the team really wasn't up to the fucking task.
Maybe they were telling the truth.
Maybe they didn't mean everyone has trouble animating female character models. Maybe they just meant, guys, we're in deep shit and we can't
do it.
We
really
right
don't
now.
Have the time to do this.
So Unity comes out and it's a bug-filled mess. People walk around like crabs, they have improper skeletons, they get stuck in fireplaces, pieces of their face disappear mid-kiss, and like, that's not part of the plot, it's not meant to scare you, it's just, this is what happens.
It's just bad. It's basically incomplete.
And this is all funny, except for that Ubisoft put an embargo on the reviews until noon... PST, the day of release. Day of release. So that's 3 p.m. Eastern time.
After
I think that's right.
Tons of people have probably bought it.
Right, because it got a midnight release. And I am one... I've always said that if your review... If you put an embargo on your review past release day, anytime past midnight release day, you are broadcasting to the world that there is something wrong with your game. I mean, there's no way to read that any other way. Now, they insisted... So a review embargo, just to talk about quickly, is when they send out copies, review copies of these games, you're not bound by law, but they suggest very sternly that you cannot publish your review of this game until this time on this day. And it's usually to keep any... In some cases, it's used to keep any one site from getting a traffic bump by rushing through the game and getting the first review out. That's fair. But when it's done like this, which it was done with Destiny and I believe another game this year too, it usually sends up red flags that they want to sell as many launch day copies as they can before people read the reviews. Ubisoft swears that the reason for their embargo on this is that there's a heavy online component, and they wanted to make sure that reviewers could experience that online component before they published the reviews. But the thing is, if you're only making the embargo for 17 hours after it's released, they're not experiencing the full online component anyway. And a game like Assassin's Creed is still at its core a single player game. So that's bullshit from Ubisoft. They knew they were shipping a product that was fucked and half finished. I mean, your main character falls to the floor randomly.
Well,
they tried to say that it was the hardware's fault. It's like bullshit. The most buggy the PS4 and the Xbox One, the most buggy version of the game is the PC version.
Yeah.
I mean, so these Kotaku went out there and said, and I do actually applaud them for this, that they're not going to abide by any of these embargoes anymore, even if it means that they don't get games for free or early, because they don't usually publish the reviews on the day of release anyway. They usually publish them a few days after so they can play through more of it. And I'm all for that. You know, screw the embargo. If you have early access to a copy and it's bad, tell people.
Well, here's the thing, though. How is Ubisoft going to suffer from this, if anything? I mean, tons of people bought this anyway. I'm looking right now. There's already a forum post where they have a list of some of the bugs and which ones they're working on, which ones they're already fixed on all of the platforms, PC, PS4, Xbox One. I don't know if this is all of them, but there's a bunch of red working on it. Workarounds are posted. In green, it's fixed. Arnold gets stuck in a hay cart next to Pantheon in the district. They fixed that. Arnold can fall through the ground when free-running on various props and dropping. They fixed that in the PS4. Game crash when joining the co-op. They fixed that.
Well, I can tell you how it's going to change things. People aren't going to pre-order. And they rely on pre-orders to show investors that they're going to make money.
So, okay. From Ubisoft's standpoint, obviously you have a release date in mind. But even when you are, say, 3 months out and you're still playtesting, you're getting the bugs out, can't you at least make the call? What is the difference to them to wait a week or two to release it later? What would it hurt them for the goodwill of the fans to say, you know what? We need at least a week to fix this still. Because obviously they've made these fixes in a pretty... Some of these fixes are already done in like a few days.
Right.
So if they took a week or two, you wouldn't have pissed off half these people. You would have gotten bad reviews. So what is Ubisoft thinking and not saying, hey, let's delay this? They delay movies all the time for reshoots because the effects aren't done. They push release dates back. It's very rare you see a big movie, and this is a huge AAA game. It's very rare you see a blockbuster movie get put on the screen and it's incomplete. Doesn't happen. So why don't they treat it the same way? Let's take the extra 2 weeks and work this out.
I think it's this. One, especially in specifically Ubisoft's case, they have been running behind on pretty much all their games. I mean, Watch Dogs came out a year after the projected release date. Two, it wouldn't be 2 weeks for Ubisoft because they have the entire world playtesting the game and yelling down their throats about bugs. That's way bigger than a typical QA team. So
you're saying the QA team, if they had three more weeks, they wouldn't have found these bugs?
No, they
didn't find these at all?
They would have found some of them, but I still think...
Some of these are basic.
Yeah, like, I know they're...
Just joining for co-op,
well,
you know?
That means their QA team sucks as well, but I'm just saying, in general, you have to understand, 2 to 3 weeks of a QA team testing is different than 2 to 3 weeks of the entire world testing. Ubisoft, to do that right, would have probably had to put the game off another 3 months. Well, and they probably should have, because this is going to hurt them no matter what.
Their stock's been hurt.
Yep, their stock is hurt, and I mean, no one is pleased about this.
Their stock's dropped from the 11th, it was at almost $15, it's dropped down to $13.50.
I have people who have pre-ordered Far Cry 4 who are very concerned about whether or not Far Cry 4 is actually going to come out and be playable.
Jesus Christ. We didn't have to worry about this at least back in the day of cartridges and even PS1 discs. You know, like, this is just horrific.
It's the whole release now, patch later mentality that they've allowed themselves to get into.
There's no accountability.
No. Back in the day when a cartridge was released, or even a game on the PlayStation 1, Dreamcast, or fuck, PS2, was released, even most of the games on the PS3 or Xbox 360, it wasn't until later when everyone had, you know, was assumed to have an internet connection, the games were tested way more rigorously for bugs, because if the game was released with bugs, you can't fix it.
It was very rare. It did happen. It was very rare, though, they came out with a disc game that was fucked. Wasn't one of the Tomb Raiders really buggy when it came out, I believe, on PS2?
I think a couple of them were, but anyways.
Yeah, but they had to basically, I think they had to do returns for some of them, and so that's a loss of a lot of money. You know, but now they don't have to worry about that, because they can just update it and patch it.
Yep, you can't return it as broken, because it's functioning as everyone else's copy is, and you have to wait for the patch. But it is, like I said, no one's canceled their, comes out next week, no one's canceled their Far Cry 4 order, but people are concerned about it. I mean, I've got customers talking to me. They're like, I don't know if I want to pre-order any games from Ubisoft anymore. And that doesn't really hurt a place like us, because We will always order in multiple copies of really big name games that we're going to sell.
But it'll hurt the company.
Yeah, and we don't, and if something like, say, Assassin's Creed, we didn't pre-order any copies because no one pre-ordered it. So we didn't get it. And no one's called asking for it. Wonder why. It's going to become less and less of a detriment to us to not pre-order a game, and it's going to become more and more of a detriment to the company.
Yeah, this is a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't, you know what I mean? Like I said, the stock's gone down. I mean, the stock's gone down about 10%. That's a big drop in a few days.
The BBC did an article on it. The BBC never talks about video games, and the BBC was talking about what a fucking train wreck this game was.
Yeah. It hurts your scores for your reviews, obviously, your Metacritic, if you follow that.
Well, no, stuff, see, that's so. The problem. When you look at the reviews, they're fine. Well, in spite of a few bugs, we would still play this game.
Really? They've been getting a pass by the major.
Well, they've been getting like 7 and 8s out of 10s, which is anywhere, I mean, you know, converted over to normal people scores, that's like a 1 to a 2. But no, still, but
it's all the sites where they're running probably the Assassin's Creed banner ads on the left and right.
They're patting Ubisoft on the ass.
That's good. That's
Try good. Again, guys.
What great journalism. What great integrity. So, yeah, I guess, like I said before, they weren't lying about doing
obviously can't.
We talked about that like 8 months ago, 9 months ago.
I saw a picture of a woman, and she was like crab walking, but like her stomach was caved in, and it was just fucking ridiculous.
It's like the new Resident Evil game. This is fantastic. So basically, be on the lookout for, I guess, Ubisoft titles in the future. Obviously, tons of bad will they built up now. Hopefully, gamers don't forget it, and you vote with your wallet. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
that's what it comes down to. So, this is going to make Frank really sad. Frank loves the Fantastic Four. It's the first family of superheroes. The Fantastic Four films that came out, and they were 2005, 2007, with Jessica Alba and with Chris Evans, who's now Captain America. They weren't good films. The first film in particular, and I saw both these in the theater, it was so low budgeted. That half the whole middle of the third of the movie, they're stuck inside the Fantastic Four tower, just hanging out, goofing off. They don't like get a chance to even use their powers really until the end of the movie. So it was not good. Rise of the Silver Surfer fared better in 2007. It actually had Silver Surfer. He actually looked pretty cool. They actually used their powers more. But then Galactus was a cloud at the end. You didn't really see Galactus. There was no big fight against Galactus at the end. It was just sort of Silver Surfer flying into the cloud. And that's where Fox sort of ended that in 2007. And then people were like, all right, this is going to come back to Marvel because Fox has no idea what they're doing. They're not putting the money into it. This is right after doing the abysmal X-Men 3 having no budget with that. And you need a budget to do a Fantastic Four movie. It's they're a cosmic space fighting team.
Yeah, it's all special effects.
Yeah, it's all special effects. Even though Thor is in a suit, that's still an expensive suit. Thing's in a huge suit.
Yeah.
So either you get a huge suit, it costs a lot of money, or you do CG, which costs a lot of money. Human Torch is a lot of money. You know, Invisible Woman, that's not cheap. And then you got a guy that stretches.
Right.
You know. The one thing about those movies, though, even though Dr. Doom in the movie, the backstory, like he was like also a scientist on the team and he knew everyone, even that was stupid, the Doom costume still was pretty good. The Doom costume looked like Doom. So that was cool. So, for some reason, Fox wants to have a go at Fantastic Four. They're lucky enough putting out the last few good X-Men movies and getting back on track there. But they want to do another Fantastic Four movie. And so, at the start, people were concerned about it. It was the director of the guy that did, the movie where like they get special powers. And it was like found footage film. And like I'm crazy. It was like a found footage film with the teenagers and the three of them. They start doing crimes, and you know it's like all telekinesis stuff. And so that's the director doing this. And I probably should know my shit about the director. But here's the weird thing though about this: no one knows anything about this movie. There was no Comic-Con footage. No teasers have been shown. No costume reveals. And this comes out next summer.
Yeah,
we're only 7 months away, and it's supposed to come out.
And now we know why no one saw
and
anything.
Now we know why they're hiding it from us. Yes. So here's the problem with this movie. The first problem was that they're all cast. They're all like early 20s.
Yeah, they're all super young.
They're really young. And Reed Richards is an older guy. He's got the gray hair going on.
He's been a skunk stripe for, I mean,
yeah. I mean, he's not 60, but he's probably gotten at least in his late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
And then, so, the only, and then, the thing, Ben Grimm, he's an older guy. He's friends a long time, so he's a guy a little bit older.
Right.
He's always a guy probably when Kirby drew him was early 40s, late 30s at least, not a 20-something.
Right.
The only young one is the Human Torch. He's the young kid.
Yeah, he's the
That's part of his personality. So we're not starting great. Some people will be upset about this. To me, this is why I'm upset about this part, because it's an unnecessary thing to explain. They cast a black actor as Human Torch.
That doesn't... See, that sort of thing doesn't bother me at all, because it doesn't need to... Well...
But here's why. Because it wouldn't bother me if he was not related to the sister on the team. So now you have to go out of your way to explain why is one black and why is one white.
Adoption?
Exactly. Do we have to go into that? So supposedly...
No, you don't. You just say adoption. I mean, that's simple. That's my least concern.
But this is where it starts to get weird, though, because now like I read today, they cast the father of them in the movie. When in the world did you ever hear about or give a shit about the parents of the Fantastic Four?
Never.
That's not a part of their origin. That's not a part of any of their stories. So now we're going into weird territory, which is why I was saying now you got to explain that. And now that's a part of the movie about now you like to explain the adoption in the movie. Okay, now it gets better, because now they're talking about, okay, Dr. Doom is going to be the main villain in Fantastic Four. I can see your eyes.
Yay! Except...
he's not going to be Victor Von Doom anymore.
No!
He's not going to be Victor Von Doom.
What's he going to be?
And the guy who looks like he's 24 who's explaining his role as Dr. Doom...
What's Doom going to be?
He looks like he is going to be an antisocial programmer on blogging sites, and his code name is Doom.
This is fucking miserable.
So again, those other things were just indications that this could be going in a weird direction. Now you know it's going in a weird direction. Now you're going in a direction that I'm not a huge Fantastic Four fan. There is no way I'm ever going to see this movie.
No, that's my thing.
Ever!
Too. I'm not a huge Fantastic Four fan. I enjoy them for their place in comic history, but I don't really like reading any of their comics. There are two things that kind of involve the Fantastic Four that I like. One actually does. It's a story arc called Big in Japan. That's a good one. And then they kind of play into Planetary, although they're never mentioned by name. But I would go see... I mean, if I felt like for one sec... But I like Doom. I love Dr. Doom. Love the shit out of Dr. Doom.
He's the best Marvel villain.
Oh, he is. If I thought for a second they were going to do Dr. Doom justice, I would probably go see a Fantastic Four film. But this is ridiculous. This is them real... I mean, it's just stupid.
He's Victor Domashev. They changed his name from Doom to Domashev as well.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
This is... The X-Men movies, they were getting right. They were, like, starting to go, even though it's their own universe, they're starting to go in a good direction with them.
So
this is them going back to how they were before, saying, fuck the comics. We're going to do our own thing. We're going to give a director his own vision, which is always good when the director wants his own vision of a comic book that's been around since 1960-fucking-1.
Yeah.
This kicked off the Marvel Silver Age, was Fantastic Four number one.
I know.
Even though you may not like the comic that much, this is a very big superhero.
That's
team.
What I'm saying. I appreciate them for what they represent.
You have X-Men in popularity, Avengers, and Fantastic Four. They're third. That's basically, I'm talking about over the last 50, 60 years. They're in the top three. So you are shitting on them and their fan base. And I'm not saying even before this was going to come out that this would have done like Iron Man numbers. But you're already starting at a lower base because it's Fox doing, not Marvel. Because obviously Marvel would do it and pay some respect to this.
Right.
But now, though, this is going to come out and bomb. So now you just have to hope that no one sees this, so the rights either get sold back to Marvel, or else you're not going to see a proper Fantastic Four movie until, like, 2023 or something, which is a shame.
Yeah.
It's just a shame, because this is their third attempt, and the other two movies are going to be better than this one.
Well, and this is to touch on something you said earlier. You can fuck the comics to a high degree and still make a movie that people want to see. Spider-Man had done it. The X-Men movies, to a large degree, fuck the comic book over, but they still stay true to them just enough.
The spirit's there
that you can read it as an arc by you can watch it as an arc by a guest author. Basically, is what I'm trying to say. This is just so completely different. This sounds like I don't even really like the guy that much. But did you ever hear Kevin Smith talk about what
the Tim Superman, Burton, the Superman,
what Tim Burton wanted to do with Superman,
kind of, yeah,
yeah, I yeah. That. I mean, this is what this sounds like.
These are directors, hotshot young director, who did that other movie where they get the alien powers, and I think it's the same black actor, Michael B. Jordan, who's playing Johnny Storm, is playing it here. This is an arrogance and a total disdain towards the fan. You may get pissed off at Zack Snyder. This is 10 times worse than anything Zack Snyder's ever done on film, because now you are totally distorting this into your own. This is, don't even call it Fantastic Four. This is what Frank would say. Don't call it Fantastic Four. It's even been reported that this is going to be gritty.
This is the
Fantastic
difference.
Four is anything but gritty. Fantastic Four is supposed to be more lively and more just like, how do you do? Like, it's obviously there's some elements that are, wow, this is fucked up shit, but it's not supposed to be gritty. It's supposed to be lively and fun. You know, so this is totally going off. I'm hoping this guy, Toby Kebbell, is playing Dr. Doom again. It looks like he's 24. I hope he's fucking with everyone. I really do. Or else this is their way of saying, we better get the news out now, because once people really find out, once they see the first teaser, people are going to lose their fucking shit over this.
Going back to your Zack Snyder comment, the difference is, and the reason why I hate someone like Zack Snyder, is people will pay money to go see the Zack Snyder movie. There's no fear of anyone losing their money over this Fantastic Four movie. No one's going to fucking go see it. No one.
No. I feel bad for guys like Frank, who love Fantastic Four, will never see it done with justice on screen. You see a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. That could be, that tone and spirit, that level, that should be a Fantastic Four. If Marvel had it, that would be a Fantastic Four sort of feel of a movie. Like, they can do it. And I think Marvel's saying, fuck it. They're not even doing the Fantastic Four comic at this point, partially because of this. They're pissed. Yeah. And they should be. This ruins their property.
Yeah.
This affects Marvel.
Yes, it does.
You know what I mean? I wish there was a clause in these contracts going back to the late 90s, early 2000s, when I wish there's a clause where it's overall time period, but I don't know if there are. I think it's just in continuity, not in continuity. I can't think of the word right now because I'm angry. But, like, I wish there was a clause where as long as they keep making these movies, they can keep doing it. I hope it cuts off at some point, because obviously this is a catastrophe. If you're a Fantastic Four fan, I feel really bad for you that this is what you're stuck with. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, Victor Von Doom, Doom is partially the basis for how freaking Darth Vader looks.
Yeah.
You know, and acts. You know, and now he's a hacker. He's a blogger, you know. It's like, what? So then, how is that? How is that fantastic? How is that fantastical? You know,
yeah,
like,
it's not. Well,
are they also going to find their powers in like a dirt field on the ground? And they're not going to go to space now anymore. How are they going to go to space? We're all 23 years old.
Are they not going to have powers? Is one good with a Zippo? One's good at hiding. One's a contortionist, and one's really strong.
It's going to be like Fantastic Four meets Watchmen.
Yeah.
You know, they're
right.
They're all based in reality somehow. Holy shit.
So
this is what Toby Kebbell said. I'm excited to see it too, but my nerves really. The only thing I can tease you about is what I worked on the most with the voice, because nobody, even in the cartoons when I was watching them, I was like, so where's he from? There's a mild change, and I'll tell you because of our history. I guess he's talking to the reporter that he can trust him. He's Victor Damashev, not Victor Von Doom in our story. And I'm sure I'll be sent to jail for telling you that. The Doom in ours, I'm a programmer. Very antisocial programmer.
Yeah, that's
programmer.
Not a mild change.
And on blogging sites, I'm Doom.
God damn it. It's going to be so bad.
Holy shit. Because this is the movie everyone's forgetting about. You have Avengers coming out in May. You know, you got Ant-Man coming out next year. You're probably going to have other superhero movies come out or from graphic novels. And this is the forgotten superhero movie for a reason.
Yes.
Because this is going to tank. And I hope it tanks hard. And I hope they come crawling back to Marvel Studios saying, please, here, just we'll trade it for a bag of baseballs, as I do with the bad player. We'll just give you the rights back to this, because we have no idea what we're doing.
That would be nice.
All right.
You know who does know what they're doing?
Who knows what they're doing?
Nintendo knows what they're doing.
Woo, woo!
That's a transition for you. So the news is currently that the pre-orders for something like for Smash Brothers are way ahead of Mario Kart 8, and this is in stark contrast to what the pre-orders have been for most AAA games throughout the year, where the pre-orders have been incredibly down. And the reason why is, you know, people have a lot of faith in Nintendo, I think. And it wasn't in my mind before this, but maybe part of the reason for releasing the 3DS version, releasing it early, was to show people, hey, we've got a grip on this again. This is not going to be Brawl again. We've got a pretty decent game on our hands, and we want to get you excited
give
about
it. Give them a taste.
Yeah, exactly. What's good for Nintendo about this is ever since the release of Mario Kart 8, they're doubling their Wii sales now. And if...
Over the year.
Year on year, yeah. And if the Smash Brothers Wii U is outpacing Mario Kart 8 in terms of pre-orders, one can only assume that the hardware is going to sell with it.
For some of them.
Not to a huge... Not necessarily one-to-one, but... Because a lot of those people already bought the system Mario Kart.
It's going
to
bump it.
But it's going to keep pushing it up. And I think you're going to see the Wii U, especially after Christmas, leave floundering territory and firmly at least enter the territory that it was in with the GameCube, which is successful, not stellar, but it's doing its job.
Yeah, we've said this. At least I've said this the past year and a half. I said, don't count the Wii U out until Mario Kart comes out and Smash Brothers. Then see where it's at.
That's
because
true.
Up to this point, it's going to be 2 years. It's going to be out this Christmas.
Yep.
And then around now. So now, where is it at? If these games fail, then yes, it's a failure.
But if
these games sell it, then we're back in business.
But Mario Kart 8 was anything but a failure. And,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait to see how...
Yeah.
We're not even counting the next Zelda game.
We're not counting the next Zelda. We're not counting Splatoon and some of the other stuff that people got hyped about during E3. And... I don't know. I mean, I got to tell you, and this doesn't really affect anything globally, but after a week of using my PS4 and kind of having my honeymoon period with it and enjoying it, I went back to the Wii U last night to get the new tracks, you know, and to play some new stuff. And the Wii U is just such a friendly, pretty vibrant video game console. Like, it begs to be played. It's fun. It's video games. There's nothing serious about it. And I'm not saying that you can't take games seriously as a hobby, but it is refreshing to have something like the Wii U available. And I hope more people realize that, and I hope more people buy into it with Smash and realize that, hey, there's a place in my gaming for something like the Wii U.
So this year, Nintendo has sold 2 million Wii U units in 2014. Compared to Sony, which has sold 8.1 million PS4s, Microsoft only has sold 3.3 million Xbox Ones in comparison. So you're going to get to the point where there's a chance that the Wii U is going to get close to selling the same amount as Xbox Ones.
Yeah.
And no one would have imagined that. And this is 2 years into Wii U versus only 1 year into the Xbox One, where you're going to have almost matching numbers.
Yep.
Really bad for Microsoft. Not great for Nintendo, but really bad for Microsoft, which that's a whole other topic.
It is a whole other topic, but
it's great to see Nintendo get their foothold, as we thought, at least I thought they would at least get to that point.
All this month, Microsoft has dropped the price of, I think, the base console, $50.
Which, like, has sold more.
They're really, really trying to close that gap. But
they're not going to catch up at this point.
No, I mean, a lot of my info is regional and comes from behind the counter, but we've seen probably three times as many used Xbox Ones come through the store as PS4s. And how many used Wii U's have I seen in the past year? Two. Now, you can argue it's because they weren't selling well, but you can also argue that the people who have them aren't giving them up as quickly.
Sure. Because they still see what's coming down the pike.
Right. Because they have a handful of decent games now, and they know they're going to get decent games in the future.
And we're not even counting about what's going to make a lot of money. The Amiibos are going to make tons of money for Nintendo.
Because
for Smash Brothers, you'll be able to buy and use them.
Yep. Think what you want about them, but Nintendo's going to... Yeah, all those anti-Nintendo people. Nintendo's just adding more and more money to their bank accounts. They're not going anywhere.
No. Someone tried to argue with me because on a YouTube comment that there's a website that analyzes the risk of companies going out of business, and they gave Nintendo a 75% chance going bankrupt within the next two or three years. I said, that is insane. That is not just defying logic or any idea of what bankruptcy actually means. But you are insane to believe that off of any website.
Yeah, find a better website. That's just bullshit data.
It's insane.
Where are you getting that data from? They've already mentioned that they have enough money in their banks to basically operate for 10 years on no profit, or something ridiculous like that, or 5 years no profit.
But that's with still losing the same amount of money.
Yeah,
you know, they're doing
right.
that.
I mean, it's just, it's not going to happen. And yes, I do, believe me, I'm a Nintendo fan, but I haven't been a Nintendo console fan since probably the NES until the Wii U. I haven't gotten behind one entirely. I like the GameCube. But Nintendo... They don't always do the things that I think are smart, but they find a way to make the money and come back in the end. And their handhelds are always going to be something to float them.
People always remember, if Nintendo really wanted to, they could just go to handhelds and dominate the earth. And make tons of money off of just handhelds.
If they shut down the console division, they would lose all the costs associated with it, and they would still sell the same number of 3DSs.
Because the 3DSs make money. The Wii U's don't really turn a profit, but those handhelds sure as hell do.
Yeah.
You know, and then everything's cheaper. The cost of the games, the cost of the hardware, you know, and all the downloads, and Don't worry. We know for some weird reason you want a video game company to fail, which is insane to think about, but they're not going to.
I don't really want any video game company to fail.
Sony's not a video game company.
Well, neither is Microsoft.
Microsoft's not.
But, I mean, Sony's been in it for a while.
They've been in a while.
I want more options. I want the options available to me. I don't want anyone to... I don't want to see any of the good franchises associated with the consoles necessarily to ever go out.
Sure. So... We'll see after the holiday season. It'll be really interesting to see what Nintendo offers, in terms of a Smash Brothers bundle. And I guess we'll come back in January and see how many more they do a million more or something. That'd be cool.
I hate to even talk about it, but Black Friday, I saw. I think it was Best Buy was doing a Wii U bundle. The Wii U itself comes with Super Mario 3D World.
Okay.
And then it comes with Donkey Kong's Tropical Freeze, which is a way underrated game.
That's like a $40 game, right?
And it also comes with Smash Brothers U.
So you're getting
for $350 or $360.
So
that's insane.
So the base price is usually $300, right?
Yeah.
So
you're getting three really good games for $60.
You're basically getting $50 more free or $100 more free, something like that.
I mean, but all three of those games are worthwhile. Like I said, Donkey Kong's Tropical Freeze is underrated. Super Mario 3D World is fantastic. In Smash Wii U, I mean, we all basically know what to expect at this point.
Yeah. So I guess, again, we'll see what happens. Nintendo is going to give it their... I mean, the Wii U is going to be around for at least another 3 years, easily.
Yep.
It'd be 5 or 6. Nintendo consoles usually, 6-7 years. Don't worry about it. Even though Ubisoft and EA stabbed Nintendo in the back and are not publishing any third parties,
it's not really hurting them any.
It's not that much as I thought it would.
Yeah.
Not having GTA 5 on the Wii U hasn't hurt them as much as I thought it would. It's obviously not good, but you're still catering to those. Well, I'm going to have either Wii U and a PC or a Wii U and a PS4.
You want a broader software library wherever you can get it. But the fact that Nintendo is not dealing with any fallout from a super buggy version of Assassin's Creed Unity is not hurting them any.
No, it's not hurting them, but not having...
They can say, hey, but our recently released Mario Kart DLC is fucking fantastic. And it is. I mean,
And they have control of that, obviously. Yeah. There's something to be said for that. You have a direct control over the biggest games on your
system. The biggest flaw that people associate with Nintendo systems is that they have no third-party support is also their biggest asset. Most of their best games are first-party, and they are meticulously combed over for problems.
Yeah. And they're almost always... It's hard to think of a game that was received poorly that was...
No one wants to call them AAA because they don't have the budget that the other games do, but they are.
AAA.
They're AAA.
They're Nintendo AAA.
Yeah.
You know. All right.
Q&A.
Q&A time on the Friday no date edition of the CU podcast.
That's so harsh.
So this is from at Mason McShred. I'm looking to expand my Master System collection. What are some good hidden gems? Now, being that there's only 114 games in the U.S., a lot of them are hidden because it wasn't really a well-known console or bought by that many people. I think the market share of the Master System was probably less than like 3%, when it was out. So
my favorite game for the system that I don't think anyone really pays attention to is Penguin Land, which is this weird game where you start from the top of a vertical level and you have to go down to the bottom and you have an egg and you have to protect it and you peck through layers of brick and you have to push it down only certain numbers of steps so that it doesn't crack and you have to protect it from enemies. It's incredibly cute. It's actually very difficult and there's a lot of pre-planning and strategy involved and it's not expensive. So I would say go find Penguin Land.
All right, let me go through my list because I've not played a huge amount of Master System games here. But I will say this. Games like, I mean, you can't get wrong with a game like Phantasy Star. You really can't.
That's not a hidden gem.
Oh, okay. Then what is a hidden gem? Like Psycho Fox? I mean, what are we looking at?
Zillion 2. A lot of people don't like Zillion 2 because it ditches the Metroid-style format of the first one, but it's still a really good action game. I really like... The Master System port of Moonwalker is actually fairly good.
Would you call that a hidden gem because it's on the Genesis?
it's a hidden gem because no one knows that version.
But you'd rather play on the Genesis, though. You'd rather play Sonic on, even though Sonic's not bad in the Master System, you'd rather play it on the Genesis.
Not necessarily. It's a completely different game. It's more of a platformer. There's no loops. There's no speed.
Well, then I like it a lot better already.
There you go.
How about your games? I consider a Fantasy Zone pretty much a hidden gem.
I don't. That's like a big name for the system. That was an arcade game. But arcade ports.
That's my point, though. A big name on the Master System isn't a big name.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Fantasy Zone the Maze is pretty fun, and that's definitely kind of hidden. That's like a Fantasy Zone back Pac-Man clone. But really, I'm gonna stick with Zillion 2 and Penguin Land. Since Pat can't seem to find anything that's hidden.
Master System confuses me because it's like no one had it. So to me, a lot of these are gems to me. You know, like their version of Double Dragon. Check it out. You know, no one's played it. It's better than the NES one to me.
It's two player.
Exactly. How about the Wonder Boy games?
Those aren't hidden.
So I think that no one's played Wonder Boy.
You're
the Dragon's Trap.
You're picking all of the most popular Sega Master.
Because you know why? I never played Walter Payton football to know if it's good or not.
Fine. Next question, Chris Sopcich. I love you, Chris. You sent me a very cool T-shirt, and Pat too.
Thank you.
Walk us through your pre-marathon, post-marathon rituals. Anything you religiously do each year. I'll give you a pre and a post. The pre is Pat and I will argue the morning of. And the post is that I will drink a beer in the shower after every marathon and take a photo of it.
I will partially panic before the marathon because usually there's something that has to be done that hasn't been done still.
Yes, he will.
And I had to do the setup here in the morning, and it's painful. But there's so many wires. It's like I'm doing NASA over here. I will take a shower about 20 minutes before the marathon to freshen up, start the marathon with wet hair.
I think a during marathon ritual for you would be the nap, which is the first time I've brought it up this year.
I've only done it twice. What are you talking about?
You've done the nap every year since the first year.
No, I haven't.
Someone will pick those out for me.
The first two, if you count the 10 seconds in Jackal, I did not nap the first 2 years at all. That's totally, you know why? The first 2 years, I was drinking the 5-hour energies. I gave them up because they're really bad for you. I stopped doing them.
Whatever.
I think I started the nap year three. It was not the first two. Definitely not the first year. I was up all 31 hours. You know why? I was a wreck the entire rest of the week after the first marathon. Go watch. I did an update video. I think I shot it the Monday or Tuesday after the first marathon. I looked like I was dead 2 days
later. You looked like you were dead last year, too.
Last year I was in bad shape. No, I was really bad shape. The worst shape I was in could have been arguably the third year. After the third year, I remember hanging out with Frank. Edwards,
I think
and I
fourth
wanted...
year. I think,
no, no, no.
I think last
no,
year.
I was in great shape last year compared to the third year. I've been getting better every year. This year, I was actually pretty damn good afterwards. I was surprised. Anyway, so afterwards, what's going to happen is I'll look at the chat room. I'll usually put the – this year, I was a little bit later. But I'll put the commercials back up. I'll sort of convalesce and then take a little nap. And then Frank usually is good enough to either buy me Italian food for dinner or this year he actually cooked.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I was actually with it. I was up to like midnight. I was actually in decent shape. I was like, all right. Usually there's like that barrier between consciousness and subconsciousness that like you're in the middle of. I was pretty lucid afterwards.
The problem for me is after the marathon, I can't sleep. If the marathon ever ended on time or like an hour early, I could probably go home and sleep for a significant amount. But when it pushes even an hour past, I don't care. I mean, it's part of what we come to expect. But
2 hours past
I think it's just the you know how it works for my body. I can't sleep. I was up until like 4 a.m. this year,
which I don't understand how it's even possible. That's some weird thing. I don't understand how you did that.
I'm an insomniac. I've told you I don't sleep. So like when the window misses me, it misses me hardcore.
So why'd you let the window miss you?
There was no window. The window would have been like 10, and I'm not going to sleep at 10 in the morning. With
oh, no,
two I, hours left in the marathon.
Oh, I thought you meant we actually went home.
No. No. It's really tough for me to find that appropriate time to sleep.
That's so weird how you can't just crash.
Nope, can't do it.
I think what was weird about this year, I was more rested than other years. I had like hyper dreams. Like usually, usually it's like after the marathon, if I crash, you'll have those. I start dreaming immediately,
yeah,
which means you're
no,
in a deep sleep.
I
it's
get
like
that.
You're done. You dream like your mind's ready to just put you into a deeper sleep. When I dropped on the couch, it was like for the first 5 minutes I couldn't fall asleep. And then I was getting like turbo fast dreams, or I knew I was dreaming. I couldn't remember. It was like it recharged me more than it usually did. Afterwards, I was fine. After that. I got it back. I was a little away. I was fine for the rest of it. I like my hour nap. All right, next, this is from at Kex31. Thoughts on the recent announcement regarding CM Punk writing for Thor Annual Number 1? It always is a weird thing to me when, especially for comic books, that you have either directors like Kevin Smith writing for comic books that they have no rights to even get anywhere near. For some reason, I guess because they're a known entity, Marvel gets these guys to do celebrity writing jobs, I guess to boost sales. But why? CM Punk is no more qualified to write a Thor comic story than I am. I understand that a guy who's big, it gets buzz, maybe I'll check it out. Then again, in annuals, they usually have like five or six different stories. Maybe he's writing a smaller story. You know what I mean? So when I just don't get it.
When was this inked? Because CM Punk is, I mean, no offense, he's nothing right now. He's not with anyone. He's not wrestling. So what is supposed to be the draw of this?
I don't know. I know he's a comics fan. He always says that he always reads comics, which is fine. But again, it doesn't give you the right to write for one.
And Kevin Smith, I've read some of his arcs. And I mean, not only is he a director, he's a writer. But writing for a comic is way different than writing for a movie, writing an article, writing a book. And most of Kevin Smith's arcs, I mean, they're not flat out horrible.
For Daredevil, we're talking about?
No, I'm talking about the Batman ones he did. Like the mini Bats ones, the mini like six issue ones he did. They're not awful, but they're not great. And the reason why is the pacing is all off. Comic book writers don't get enough credit as actual writers for what they do, because they are writing for a very specific medium that needs a very specific pacing.
25 pages about,
yeah,
right?
And a very specific way of telling the story. Yes. And that is not something that CM Punk has ever been trained to do. It's not something Kevin Smith was ever trained to do, to my knowledge. And they always come off as like fan fiction. They don't understand the flow. They try to adhere to, like, you know, the canon and stuff like that, but the flow is weird and the stories are always just a little off, and it's very strange.
I feel bad for CM Punk because obviously he's in a semi-retirement. The guy's 35. He can still wrestle for 5 more years. I know he was banged up, but he appeared on some Nerdist stuff with a microphone at like live events, and he's out of place. I mean, you're a professional wrestler. You're a good professional wrestler, but that's what you are.
Right.
People, if you want to be a commentator, I think he was on At Midnight one episode or some other. I think it was on The Talking Dead one episode. But I like you, CM Punk, but that's not people. People don't want to get your opinion on that stuff.
Right.
They don't care.
No.
They really don't. And you can try to make a go at it doing something else, but you're always going to be a professional wrestler. That's what you're known for. People want to see you do that at the end of the day. I have no interest in reading, good or bad. I really have no. This is not going to make me buy a Thor annual. It's just not.
Right. It's not going to make me go out and buy it either.
Please don't beat me up, CM Punk. I'm a fan.
So from @Jeron0004, do you think jump scares in video games are too common these days?
What?
The reason. The reason. I was actually scared for a second. The reason I put this question in is not so much the question itself. I guess. It's how horror games are going about what they're doing. For instance, let's just talk about Evil Within again. Not a particularly frightening game, okay? It's a good game. It's not particularly frightening. Silent Hills, on the other hand, the PT playable trailer demo, it's very frightening for me. Why? Because they psychologically build you up to be frightened of what's going on. It's very weird. They keep changing things on you. You never know what's going on in the corner. And even though one of the biggest scares in that game is a jump scare when the most common death occurs when the girl breaks her neck, it's terrifying every single time because you're tense. You're on edge. What I think is overused and what's way too common in video games these days, in horror games, is gore. I'm not opposed to gore. I mean, it has its place, but there's nothing scary to me about someone getting their head chopped off in Evil Within when I die. It's just gore.
No, we talked about that last week.
Yeah,
That's not horror.
This
me.
Isn't horror.
That's gore.
Right.
It's totally different.
I want psychological horror. I want suspense. Yeah. I don't want fountains of blood and stuff like that. So the fact that there are games, which I unfortunately haven't played it, but like Five Nights at Freddy's, which does have a lot of jump scares, but rely on keeping you tense as opposed to showing you a whole shitload of blood, I'm happy that that exists again. That's the type of game that I want to play with all the lights off and you know, jump and amuse my wife, you know, when I freak out, you know, and she sees me freak out and she thinks it's funny. That to me is better than the alternative.
Sure. This is from @JimLong82. What are your What are your and Ian's thoughts? You, what are you and Ian? You're and Ian thoughts. What are Pat and Ian thoughts on The Walking Dead show or Telltale Games
or comic? Because why wouldn't you include the comic?
That yeah, I guess that's what
all.
Started off that people forget. Yeah, about. Yeah.
As far as the comic goes, I couldn't keep up with it. It's good. It really is. And it's a black and white comic, which I adore black and white comics. My wife has every single issue and most of the variants. And it's a really good ongoing narrative that constantly shifts and changes. But like the show, it's kind of this weird ebb and flow where like you get a lot of stuff that keeps you interested, and then you get these painfully drawn out segments. As far as the Telltale Games version goes, I love it. I love everything that Telltale Games does for the most part. And they really did a good job of making this like choose your own adventure, pseudo action adventure game out of it. That really works with the theme and the, you know, they created kind of an alternate universe for it, but I think that works fantastically.
I watched the first, what are they, in the fifth season of Walking Dead now? They're in the fifth.
The first season was only six episodes.
Which was excellent. Yeah. It was excellent because it was self-contained. It seemed like you were following along for the ride, discovering the world of the zombies, not knowing a whole lot. It was really cool when he got to Atlanta, and he's surrounded by him with a tank and everything. Like, this is a really cool concept. This mm-hmm. seems really cool. I gave the second series a follow, and it was like, all right, I see what you're going, the farmhouse and everything, But now we're getting into soap opera territory. Now we're getting into, you know, you have the main villain, his friend, he used to be an officer with, and he's got to deal with him, and it's just like, okay, now we're spinning out of control, where my interest is starting to wane. Get to the third season with the town and the prison, I'm like, now I'm out. And I'm not just out because I think that the zombie genre is tiresome, but to me, there's only so many times you can see zombies get blown apart in the face and the head. There's only so many times you can have the same fucking moral dilemma of, oh no, he got bit, should we shoot him now or not? There's only so many times you run out of, there's such a limited amount of moral dilemmas that you get from these zombies that I don't care anymore. And yes, it is, you have stuff like torture porn in movies. This to me is, killing zombies is, good or bad, it's murder porn. It's, we can get away with killing people without having the guilt of killing them because they're monsters now. And again, it's cool to see that, but that's the draw of it. And when that to me is what the overpowering sort of draw is of the zombie genre when it comes, let's kill people in awesome ways, but we don't feel guilt over it because they're not people anymore. And it's like, all right, this is what it's become.
I've never actually thought of it that way, and I don't think I ever will, because they're so far removed from actual human form. I mean, they're bipedal, that lots of things are.
But you know what I mean? But it's just...
Sure, I mean, but that's the thing. I feel like Walking Dead stayed away from that for a long time. I think Walking Dead stayed away from violence more so than other zombie things did, because they wanted to focus on drama. And see, that's where I kind of came back, and I haven't watched anything of the new season, which people seem to be down on, but in the end of... The last half of season four, it wasn't at all about zombies.
I didn't watch season four at all.
I didn't watch. I mean, I've watched so little of it. I catch it when Vonnie watches it. But I got into the end of season four because it was very much... It was human drama, but it was very well done. And then they worked zombies in, and then they worked something else in fantastically at the end of it. And that's where I left off. Am I ever compelled to go back to it, though? No. And I think the problem is even though I like the zombie genre... I will say, I think it's just the zombie genre to me has become a bit tired. I don't constantly.
Well, sure.
I would have loved a series like this 10, 15 years ago.
Sure.
I don't so much need it now.
Sure. Sort of the Dawn of the Dead remake restarted, then you had Shaun of the Dead, and all of a sudden zombies are cool again, you know, going back 10 years ago. To me, it's just sort of the really, whenever you, it's either, oh, God. To me, at least from I saw most of season three, I probably rewatched it. I saw the last episode, but you literally have a villain with a fucking eye patch that's the evil governor. And it's like, can we have any sort of nuance at all to this characterization? He's literally mowing down his own followers at the end with a machine gun. Well, everyone's like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. It's cartoony. It's not played out well. Again, that first six episodes was like, okay, I can see this is interesting, the human drama. Should we just off ourselves? We're living in a world that there's no hope. So the few people, they stay at the CDC and just destroys it. That was cool. That had a message, at least, to that.
Right.
Now it's just cartoon violence and, I don't know, it's just not for me. It's just not for me. It's just like, I was there for a little bit, and now I'm just, I don't care. Right. I don't care. I don't care if I'm not cool anymore.
I think you'd find that that's pretty split. At Konacha 37 says, why do greatest hits releases sell for far less than the original release games? Is it collectors only wanting the original copy? Fuck that shit. Anyways.
What was that response for?
Because here's the deal. Part of it is them, yes, wanting the original copy. But I think part of the greatest hits black label thing when it comes to...
Versus green on PlayStation?
Yeah. I think a lot of that is born on message boards, and it spreads because of that. Because people never used to care. They were just excited to get a copy of the game. And now it's like every time I get a phone call...
They want the original.
Oh, is it the black label or the green label? Someone's telling them that it's better to have the black label. There are
Which
games,
is funny, because the black label there's so many more of, you know.
Well, in some instances, not in all instances.
For Final Fantasy VII.
But in some instances, there are way more black label than there are green label. The initial print one was way bigger than the green label print run. And it's the same game, and it just, it bothers me because I don't want to sound like I'm just cordoning off a whole section of people here, but the people who get really picky about greatest hits, green and black, tend to be some of my most annoying customers.
It's also on Super Nintendo, you have some of the million
sellers. Yeah,
the million sellers, which I don't think collectors pay that much attention. There's only, you know, you have like Super Mario Kart and you have Super Mario World.
F-Zero,
there's way more. I mean, the old F-Zero, you can find them sealed in pallets still.
Yeah.
But that Super Mario World one's cool because you get the box for it. There was no box for the original, so that's cool.
Right.
So for those, it's actually... At least the loose ones, I don't think there's a big difference for those.
No, for loose, there's no difference.
Which is strange, because it's probably a 10-to-1 ratio, you know, for those. But no, it's weird for the PlayStation ones. I don't know why either, that people would care much.
I mean, I understand that, you know, in some instances, the black label is rare. But like I said before, and like you said, in some instances, the black label greatly outnumbers the green label. And they get really picky about it. Most people who are looking get rude and get super picky over it. And I think it's just something, like I said, that was born on internet collecting forums. Where, you know, that just became the must-have item.
So then eventually, 20 years from now, the green labels are worth 10 times.
Right, exactly, because everyone ignored the green labels and, you know, threw them out or pissed on them or burned them. And, yeah, you know, the green label will become more desirable.
All the ones in my collection are black label. I don't think I've ever come across... A lot of green label Final Fantasies, at least off the top of my head, mostly been black label.
No, yeah. when I look at the store, nines, I get a bit of black green label in there, but the Final Fantasy VIIs and the Final Fantasy VIIIs are almost all black label. Something like Final Fantasy Tactics is probably more often green label than black label.
Mine might be green for that.
Yeah, but other than that, I just think it's a silly distinction.
Speaking of silliness, this is from at Console Colors. Do either of you collect console color variants? The biggest one is N64. There's like 9 of them, and I have most of them. I don't have the great purple one. I don't have the Pokemon one, which always eludes me whenever I find it at the swap meet. It's always either missing the controller or missing the stupid lid on the top. So I'm like, what's the point? I'm spending $50 on that. I'm missing the grape one. I think I'm missing the watermelon one, but I think I have most of the others. Maybe I'm missing the orange one, but you know, I have like 6 of them or 7 of them. I have the blue one. I have the jungle green, you know.
When I was in high school and I had money to throw away on crap like that, I never owned them all at the same time, but I owned every color of Game Boy Color.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of Game Boy Colors.
And part of me kind of would like those, except for if I ever had the money to really throw away on just getting every color variant, I would get every color variant of the Neo Geo Pocket Color. Because there's so many. Because there's between the first run and the slim redesign, there's probably, I'm gonna guess, 13 off the top of my head.
We could go 1 month without referencing the Neo Geo Pocket Color.
I'm fairly certain we did go one month.
It'd be like going 1 month without referencing Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat.
Be like,
can we go 1 month?
No,
please.
Nope. Everyone's got their console.
But other than that, the other console variants. I mean, there's a few Xbox. You have like the green Halo one. You know,
there's the Mountain Dew one.
You have the white PlayStation and the silver PlayStation 2.
Well, don't forget the automotive color PlayStation 2s. Those are super rare. Those are like 600.
I'll forget those. I have no idea about them.
there's also Dreamcast has some pretty pricey color variants.
In the U.S., they only had the black sports
one. White and the black, but then you've got the blue stars and the red umbrella one in Japan, and those go for quite a bit.
Don't know about this.
Yeah, those are just off the top of my head. I mean, and then obviously the portables always have a billion different color and style variants.
Of course, you have the Intellivision 2 and 3s. You know, a lot of people like that hard-to-find Intellivision 3 console.
I guess those are color variants.
Actually, the 3 is just the same as the 1, except it's like silver instead of gold.
Okay.
That's the difference. I have that laying around. Actually, mine works. I have an extra Intellivision in the box. Doesn't work. Anyone wants it. I also have an extra Vectrex, not a color variant. You want one of my Vectrex?
No.
So that pretty much wraps it up. Follow us on iTunes or Stitcher. This will be up by the time you hear this, it'll be up online. Yeah, that makes sense. We also have a Patreon.
We do.
For the podcast. It's really easy to remember. It's patreon.com/pixelsickle.
Just submit some money.
Submit some money.
For approval.
For approval. It has to get approved. And then I have some stuff lined up. I got another NES Punk video I got to do. A new Ask Frank just came out. I'll put the marathon up maybe at some point in chunks. At least there'll be parts of it. And maybe you'll see us at MAGFest in a couple months. I don't know. They got to approve the panel for us to do a live CU podcast. That'd be fun, though. MAGFest.
That would be neat.
Be neato. So, for Ian Ferguson on our dateless Friday night CU podcast, I am Pat Contry. I'll just say toodles to you.
Toodles. Oodles of toodles.